Hey everybody, welcome back to Salmon Trout Steelheader Podcast, and I'm going to read just a little bit of an article from the Salmon Trout Steelheader website called Before Doggin' Happened by Mark Davis, and I'm just going to read a little bit of this article here, and again, you can find it right on the STS website, along with a lot of other articles, and they've got a special offer on the homepage you need to check out, so you can get a little taste of how nice that digital magazine is to use. So, this section begins with the low rotting technique. By far and away, the fish gettingest method was the low rotting technique used while drift fishing. Many anglers that take up drift fishing have set it aside because they simply can't feel the hits. All describe an easily mastered method using slightly modified equipment. When drifting, it is vital that the weight and gear remain in close proximity to the river's bottom. Because of this, drift fishing can be a snaggy and frustrating process, necessitating low-cost drift gear and a lot of pre-tied equipment. The axiom, if you're not getting snagged, you're not drift fishing, is very true, dissuading many anglers and guides from using this particular style of angling. It can be very frustrating when you break off 3 liters in 3 casts. With drift fishing, you have a weight that is ticking along the bottom just above rocks, logs, and other debris. Your tight line parallels the bottom structure, and a large portion of your line is vulnerable to anything it can wrap around. This is also why bobber dogging has become so popular. When drift fishing, yards of line can be in the snag zone. When dogging, you are using almost the same gear as drifting, but it is suspended under a bobber. The track of the nearly vertical line under the bobber is only inches wide, and a twitch of the rod will usually lift your gear out of harm's way. When you allow your drift gear to swing at the end of the cast, it is still in the danger zone. With a bobber, the snaggable equipment is riding well above the bottom, dramatically reducing the number of hang-ups, which is pleasing to anglers, clients, and guides alike. A bobber going down is also much more easily interpreted as a hit when compared to the gentle rubber band tug of a drifted corky. So why would anyone want to deal with the frustration caused by the frequent snags endemic to drift fishing? It is a fact that if your line is not in the water, you are not fishing. There will be lots of time spent pre-tying gear at home and tying on new leaders while on the river. The reason drifter anglers like drifting is because the tug is the drug. So here are some things that will simplify drift angling and make it much more productive. The low rotting technique. Nearly all drift anglers will cast their line, close the reel, take up the slack, then watch the rod tip for a hit. In the good old days, there were a lot more hits than now. To be successful at the standard drifting setup, you must set the hook on almost every little pause or tug, just in case it is a fish. If you hook a piece of wood or your weight lands in a rock crevice, you stand only a slim chance of getting it all back. Another 3 minutes is spent tying on a new leader, and a half buck's worth of gear is gone, if you manage to retain the lead. This is where the low rotting comes into play. If your hook set hadn't driven the hook into the wood, it would likely have slid around the twig and proceeded on its course downstream. By using the low rotting technique, the number of leaders lost drops dramatically, as neither the lead nor the leader is driven into debris with every tug. With just a twitch of your fingers, your gear will usually just slide off most snags. Often it just wiggles its way past the obstruction because the gentle pull of the water requires no action on your part. I prefer to use a 10.5 to 12 foot noodle rod, but you could practically use a broomstick with this method and still catch fish. The rod is used more for casting and fighting the fish than detecting a bite. Here's how it works. Make the cast, mend the line, and reel up the slack, keeping the rod pointed right where the line goes into the water after the mend. The rod is not used to detect a hit. With your non-rod hand, place 4 fingers over the top of the line just above the reel and drape the remaining line under your thumb with a slight tension on the line. Follow the line with the rod, keeping it pointed to where the line goes underwater. If the line hesitates, give it a slight flick with your fingertips, not the rod. If this does not free it, use a harder flick and it will usually be free. If it is a fish, the line has an entirely different feel as it tightens. The best way I can describe it would be if you hooked into a rubber band. When that feeling presents itself, drop the line and using that hand to help with the hook set, lift the rod hard. With very long rods, it is necessary to lay the wood to them to get the hook buried. Using this method, the hook set happens much quicker than by washing the rod tip. When there's a bite, there's no need to reel the line tight. It already is. Due to the length of the rod, the upward sweep of the rod moves a great deal more line. The longer arc created with the rod having started much lower and parallel to the water's surface moves almost 20 feet of line. If the rod is pointed at the fish instead of the sky, the line becomes tight instantly and with a lot more force. When you have to watch your rod, the bite is more like a tap-tap tug, and the rod is still held high with no hook set yet. You have to reel down, pick up the slack line, and then set the hook. Another analogy describes what a fish feels when holding the rod high with you awaiting a bite. You see the bite on the rod's tip. You drop the rod lower, reel up the slack, and then set the hook. All the while, the fish is feeling movement in its mouth from your rod's movement and you reeling. If you take a bite out of a tasty hamburger and the meat begins to wiggle, what would you do? The fish with a mouth full of foreign matter will do the same thing. With the low rodding technique, the bite has been detected without any movement on your part. The rod is pointing directly at the fish. With no movement, you drop your line in your hand and instantly use it to sweep up and set the hook hard, very quickly. When using this technique, the rod hand goes on full auto with no thought involved, much like when you touch a hot stove. That extra half second in your favor makes a huge difference in the number of successful hookups. If you were fishing in wind, there is much less line being affected by the blow, and the bites are much more easily detected. If it is really windy, just lowering your rod tip a little puts nearly all your line in the water and out of the wind while still keeping a tight line. Just lifting the rod 2 feet will give you a quick and effective mend. Now it goes on and it talks about drift weights, but this is just another excellent article on the STS website. I'd really encourage you guys to go check that out, and the special offer where you can preview the magazine for free right on the homepage. It's pretty awesome. All right, guys, thank you so much. Keep an eye out for more episodes to come. And as always, get in touch, customer service at Amato Books, if you have any questions or to suggest anything for the podcast. All right, thanks, guys.